Rolling, Bob.
Yeah, tick, tick. Tick, tick, tick. That's not my music you might be hearing. I'm at Bluffers Park. It is Saturday afternoon, about half past three. The weekend before pod camp. Yeah. Looking forward to that. It's always fun just to see people, have a few beer, and just talk, you know. I have my routine. Friday night at the Imperial Pub upstairs. Saturday at wherever the party is. And not doing a presentation this year, which I'm glad about. I've said all I have to say about it. And although there might be new audiences out there that... you know, need to be reminded about the value of amateur podcasting. I think there's other people will be getting that point across. So, anyway, I'm just glad the pod camp is continuing. Thanks in advance to John Lashinsky and crew, who do a majority of the work. And glad. Well, anyway, there's no point going on now. I'll talk about it at the event and after. It's a cold but a clear blue sky day. A lot of snow still on the ground. We've had a real dose of winter. I haven't even opened the door on my road trek for quite a while. Speaking of which, I have no show notes today, but a couple of things I do want to talk about. And one is road trek. Road trek is in receivership, and you know. The vehicle I have, the one you, Sal, that some of you know, is a Road Trek. Road Trek had wonderful brand loyalty and was a real quality product. Now, as they moved forward in a very competitive market, they started bringing in a lot more technology so that people could boondock. That means camp without needing to plug in, you know, so you could have solar power and lithium batteries and under-the-hood generators, which would fire up your electrical system when needed and so on. And because this was new, and because a lot of the technicians at service dealers all over North America, not all were trained, there were a lot of problems. So models from 2016 on, there were a lot of stories about troubles people having. There's been famous Road Trek groups on Facebook and others, and they didn't want people talking about these troubles. So sometimes people were silenced or booted off if they complained too much. That was very unfortunate. But the model I have, 2008, and any of the older ones were very reliable machines, still are, and will keep the value. The new ones, because the company is now in receivership, due, it appears, to embezzlement on a major scale by people in top positions who are hiring family members and skimming a lot of money and making false invoices. The whole story is not out yet. And it won't be resolved until those people are in jail. It's tragic. It's a terribly sad story. Everybody in Kitchener, Cambridge, who worked at Ehrenheimer, who purchased Road Trek 3 years ago, a German company, and Road Trek itself, which was an independent company, we're all laid off permanently on Friday. So that's like at least 800 workers. Previous to that, another 100 were let go. And wow, in today's economy, people who had, you know, people who've been working there all their life, they don't know if they've got a pension. They don't know what's going to happen. The company is in receivership, and I'm going to close the windows here. It's a terrible thing. I sent out an email today to people I met when we had the last gathering at Road Trek for the owner's course. And they were so good to us. And you know, wow. It just seemed it was at its peak, you know. I mean, we're showered with gifts. We only paid about $300 to go. We had mechanics assigned to our vehicles. Everything just seemed, wow. It's amazing. And then the next thing you know, wow, game over. I was lucky. I had mine serviced, generator fixed, and the vehicle winterized in November. And here it is, January, and there is no more road trek. They said, oh, come back in the fall. Our new service facility will be open. They've already purchased the building. And we just don't know what happened. So I'm just putting that out there. There'll be more on this story later. But it's terribly, terribly sad that it appears greed and dishonesty brought this company down and took with it every employee who'd been there for, you know, a very long time, quite a few of them. And a brand name quality product is no more. So we'll see how that spins out. But there's the update. Sal will keep its value. I'm not directly impacted. The people who are impacted are the ones who bought 2016 and on, who may have had 6-year warranties. Well, the service centers are not validating those warranties if Road Trek's not going to pay them, and nothing is coming out of Road Trek, you know. So people have got a new vehicle with a lot of technical glitches that may surface, and probably nobody to fix them. So that's most unfortunate. Sad all around, but it just appears it comes down to greed and corruption. And I just don't get that. Like, people do things like that for personal enrichment? Really? Apparently they were making false invoices and people were sending in deposits on their road trek with, you know, apparently no intention of them ever being built. These are not the factory workers on the floor. This is the top management. So we'll wait in here. But I'm sure if you Google Road Trek, you'll find out there'll be continue to be updates. So that's one thing. Moving closer to home, it was my wife's birthday earlier in the month. And I don't know what happened. I know I cut off a clip on the last podcast or one before that and probably didn't mention it. I've been notoriously bad at getting gifts that are suitable. And this time, I just, you know, I remember hearing you saying at Christmas, I like flowers. So from Christmas to February, I remembered, flowers. And that is what I did. And she was so happy with it. And I'm just so glad for once I got it right. I had to write down the flowers because I'm useless at even remembering what they're called. And these were lilies, and they were beautiful, great big things, but they smelled so nice, and that's what she treasured about them. They're gone now, but they lasted, and that was very, very much appreciated. And on the way out, I saw these beautiful white orchids as a plant, and decided to get that too. So it was a lot of flowers, and that was wonderful. And then for Valentine's Day, we don't do, you know, the chocolates and gift cards and the things you're supposed to do. Japan has a tradition for Valentine's that the women buy the men chocolate, and that means your boss at work. It's a crazy thing. And then exactly 1 month later, on March 14th, they have Giri Choco Day. Giri is an obligation. It's called White Chocolate Day, but they nickname it Giri Choco. It means you're obliged. So anybody who gave you chocolates, you have to give them back chocolates. But you can't buy the cheap chocolates that are now on sale. It has to be white chocolate, something different. So it's, you just can't sort of switch. Here, I'll give you back the bloody things I didn't want to eat. You got to go out there and get other stuff. So that's kind of funny, too. But we don't do any of that. But I did make her a meal, and she was so grateful to come home from work, and I had a meal prepared for her, and she was very happy with that. So I'm glad about that. I was doing very, very well, and then today she accused me of, you know, wanting to tell my stories but not listen to hers. And guilty sometimes. And the thing is, she's not, oh, this is terrible to say, but she, you know, I think my sons had backed me up. She's not a very good storyteller. The stories wander a little bit, and they're also usually half in Japanese and half in English, so you really have to concentrate. And if you miss one word, you could be, like, the whole topic. And then because she's wandering a little bit, you're just trying to nail it down, like, wait. Where are we? Like, what country are we in now? So it can be challenging. I'm saying that now, knowing she doesn't listen, and I mean that with great deal of love and affection. That you know, hey, that's just one of her charm points. But you know, it appeared as I turned my head towards my computer halfway through her story. I was able to go back. I followed her back in the kitchen. No. And I was able to tell her, no, you were talking about the Koreans who are learning Japanese because the economy is so bad and they're going over to Japan to find jobs. And by then it was too late, you know. No. So, anyway. Overall, things are fine in the homestead. I'm glad about that. Son has dropped him off at the airport 7:30 this morning. And he had an extra backpack. And he said, well, it's because I'm not coming home tonight. There's a party. So he was going to ask his boss if he could leave early and come in late tomorrow. And they're pretty flexible because they know the alternative. If the boss says no, most of the other employees just say, well, they phone in sick. And then they're worse off. So this way, at least he's given the boss a chance to prepare. And he knows when their busy time is and when the flights are. So that's good on that front, too. And my number one son, which I don't refer to him as number one son anymore because I was told not to, but Kenji out in Vancouver, or also known as Jerry, for no apparent reason, is very excited about his March trip to England, to London mainly, and then to Vancouver, to Toronto after that. So we'll see him then. And what else is in the news? I'm going to the only cafe tonight. I have not been for a very long time. Both John Meadows is in Niagara on the Lake for a little retreat to do some writing. And Brian, I mentioned last time, is somewhere in Southeast Asia. But the lovely Lisa will be around. So we'll meet at the only. Have a few pints and a good chat. On the list. What else? Something in the news. Oh, there was a little clip. That lady who swung a tire iron and a meat cleaver around the Canadian Tire, my local Canadian Tire, was sentenced to 7 years in jail, but apparently she's already served some of the time, so she could get out and parole. And she's not... You can't really think of... If you think of her as a crazy person, and they agreed that she was psychotic... But still needs to serve. Hey, you still can't do that. I don't care if your head's a bit messed up. She did want to go to Syria and fight because ISIS told her to hurt people. You can't have somebody loose on the streets and encouraging others to do the same. So don't feel much there. Oh, yeah, I was talking last time maybe about the gathering. I'd be... facilitating at our church for the book club. I was expecting 20 people. Only 10 showed up. I did not take that personally. People have their reasons. It was a very simple chapter in the book. In fact, it was a difficult chapter because it was too straightforward and too easy. There was not much meat on it. But I managed to make 23 questions, which is just to get people talking. And I gave some handouts on... you know, clips about kindness and have people read them out and then we could comment on them. And then a talk at the end of the relationship between kindness and money. You know, if you're wealthy, it's easier to perform acts of kindness. I was raising that issue. Is that really true? I mean, a smile costs you nothing. I argued that giving time, if you don't have the money, you can give time. And that's acts of kindness. So are the two tied together? And then the other question I wanted discussion on was about the relationship between kindness to humans and kindness to animals. And I used my own situation as an example, that my wife and I will spend whatever it takes to feed Toro-chan, maybe, I don't know, $30 a month, in cat food to feed him three meals a day on our deck, but I am not giving that money or an equivalent amount to children in need or people who, you know, need food or school supplies in West Africa or wherever, you know, whatever the cause is. Or Salvation Army meals and all the other things you can do with your with an equivalent amount of money. I'm putting ours on a cat. And I guess the conclusion was I was, you know, all seemed to be very understanding. Well, that's because the cat is here and now. It's at your door, at your window. It's cold and hungry. It's very easy to feed that, whereas what you see on TV telling you about somebody else's plight in another part of the world is pretty remote and you're just not directly connected, so don't feel bad about it. So, there we were. Gosh, that was just kind of a rehash of stuff I already knew. One of the things I like to try to do with the podcast is to say things that I don't know until I've said them. I don't know what I feel about them. I don't know what I think or what my opinion is. I like to surprise myself a little. And so far, this has just been me. Well, tell them this, tell them that. That's enough. And it's not enough. I want to come across something different, unexpected. Surprise even to me. Oh my God, did I say that? Really? Do I even think that? What? So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to push the pause button and come back because I don't want this thing to drag on forever. So hang on to your seats. Nope. I'll give you a tune instead and I'll come back later, hopefully with something fresh. Bye for now.
Scarecrow, as everyone knows, stood with a belt on his hat and swore everywhere he didn't care. He stood in a field where barley grows. His head did no thinking, his arms didn't move, except when the wind cut up rough and mice ran around on the ground. He stood in a field where barley grows. The black and green scarecrow was sadder than me, but now he's resigned to his fate, his hair's not unkind, he doesn't mind. He stood in a field where barley grows.
Chick, chick, chick. Chicken and yun. Chicken and yun. Chicken and yun. Okay. I'm at the stop at Warden Station for the number 9 Bellamy bus. I have podcast from here before, probably when I was drunker than I am now. I only had 3 pints tonight, but by God, were they good. I did something I've never done before at the Only, and I had the same... I knew from the first sip of the pint I ordered, and I went through the book. I go carefully, and I read each one. I look at the alcohol content. I look at who's it made by. I look at what kind of beer it is. And towards the end, I saw Cameron, dark and, I don't know, dark and spicy, dark and scary maybe, I don't know. But one sip, and I thought, you know, like, one sip, and I thought, oh, this could be my second beer as well, which I just don't do. I always go back to the book and figure, okay, now what do I want to follow that with? And so, yeah, my third beer was the same beer. Oh, shoot, my shoelaces undone. Hang on. Yeah. Ooh. No, hang on. I got to do this properly. Just wait, would you? Jesus Christ. All right. That'll get me home. So anyway, I was at home. I had no plans for tonight. I was going to do a laundry, actually. And then got a text message from the lovely Lisa, who you hear about many times on this show. And she said, you want to go to the Omni tonight? And I fired back, well, you know, I guess so. So we met at 6. And I had just a lot of very good conversation. Now, usually when I'm at Lisa, maybe Connie shows up, John Meadows, Brian, there's always somebody else. But tonight it was just Lisa and I. And very personal conversations because we're friends. And I encourage that in people. Well, you know, hey, we talked about comfort levels. We talked about how, you know, you just... It was all about the importance of closeness and friendship and being open and being comfortable in each other's space and covering sensitive topics, you know, past relationships, plans for the future. And of course, again, I'm coming from a very different spot because I'm at 70. I don't have to be making too many more plans for the future. She's considerably younger, I guess. God. Early 40s, maybe, if that. Oh, yeah. Anyway, it was a good time, and it was at the Only, and I had not been to the Only for a long time. So all is well, and I thought, well, why not say hello from this very cold, very unpleasant, there's a name for these. It's like a tunnel. Where the buses come in and then, you know, they just sort of dump off the people at one end and then zip up to the front. And I like this because they leave on the half hour, every half hour, and on the hour. They leave every half hour, you know. You get it, right? Okay. Easy enough to remember what time you need to leave to get your bus home. And drops me off at the top of my street. And how wonderful is that? Like, 5 houses down. And the neat thing is, if Yuki is out, if it just happens to be an evening, especially in the warmer weather, when Yuki is out, she'll somehow know I'm coming down, and she'll see me, because she's out prowling. And she'll sort of run up to me along the sidewalk, and I'm always saying, hey, come on, I don't want you going close to that main Bellarmine Road. Jesus, you know, stay on Farmbrook. And then we'll go home together. I know that sounds a little funny, but it's happened, believe me. It's happened more than once. So anyway, I've just told myself, listen, dude. I don't think I said dude, but as I tell the story, the easier way to tell it is to give myself a name. Hey, listen, dude, I says to myself, don't go into either of the bakeries here and go and get that, you know, one has specializes in donuts and, you know, fattening things and, you know, beef patties and so on. And the other one has more beef patties, a little more on the Asian side, maybe some noodles. They're both good. But the little voice in my head said, don't spend any more money tonight, number one. This is a $30 evening out. That's pretty good. $21 on beer, $4 tip, and $4.10 for the bus, $4.20 for return trips. So reasonable evening out. You can afford $2 for get one of those little pastry things. Now, if I had had one more beer, I would have been just drunk enough to say, yeah, well, I want one of those things now. But three pints, I'm very sensible. And I know there are delicious things in my refrigerator, like some leftover Kraft dinner with a hot dog mixed in. And, you know, Nalco always has other treats in there. So it's the trick is go home, peek in the fridge, and give yourself a late night snack. So I guess that's all I want to say to you. I mean, that was nothing exciting, but it's sort of, you know, this is real time, real life, sitting cold on a bench in February, waiting for the number 9 Bellamy bus to get me home. And that's all she wrote. Scarborough Dude, signing out. Chick, chick, chick. Chicken in the oven. Chicken in the oven. There's a chicken in the oven. If you'd like some chicken, it's in the oven. Chicken in the oven. Chicken in the oven. I think we're done with that. Thank you. Okay. I'm going to tell you a few things. I'm in my basement now, so you might hear the furnace in the background. It's a cold day in Toronto, and we had another snowfall. My son got up a little late and needed to drive to the airport, and I had already planned on that because today is Family Day in Ontario. I think it's Louis Riel Day in Manitoba and different names, but it's a nationwide holiday in each province. Has its own name for it. Family Day Ontario. People get together, spend time with your family. Go outdoors, enjoy the snow. Well, my son's working, my wife is sleeping, and I'm in the basement. And I wanted to talk to you On the way home, I drove to the Big Whopper, you know, that place for my 80-cent coffee, and it was closed till 10:30, so they've even given time off for people. Banks and institutions, a lot of places are closed today. It is a holiday. So I didn't get my coffee, but I realized, had they been open, you would have had a completely different segment. This is a segment than what you're getting now. And I need to emphasize that point, because Dixon Jane's is not structured. It's very much arises out of the here and the now. Here I'm in my basement, very comfortable, my feet up, laptop on my lap. And if I had podcast from the parking lot, or maybe I'd driven down to, might not have done Bluffers. The roads are very, very slippery, but it would have been somewhere, and it would have been completely different content, maybe even a different feeling to it. And that's just an explanation as to the nature of this podcast. Now, I say that because yesterday I listened to Dave Olson, who does a podcast called Postcards from Gravelly Beach. He does many, many things. He's all over the place. Mark had sent me a text, have you listened to this guy? And I've been listening to Dave for years. Dave has listened to this podcast. And he goes in with a theme. And it made me almost embarrassed about the Dixon Jane's podcast, because I listened to it and he's got really some nice jazz in the background or between segments. He's reading out poetry, and he's reading it beautifully. He did footnotes from Allen Ginsberg's Howl, and it was really well done. Like, I hung on every word. Very well done. So, Dave, if you ever hear this, well done, man. That was episode number 81, I think. And so, somebody else there. But it just, you know, invariably we compare ourselves. And I realized, my God, this is, and then I accept the fact this is just what it is. It's an audio journal, week by week. Where is this guy at? Now, that leads me to the next point, Kenneth. Last time I talked about Rob, our man in northern Thailand. Kenneth, I've mentioned before on this podcast, he is a listener from Atlanta, Georgia. a young man, a cyclist, a man who is very, very much into biking. Has quite a few, builds them, you know, changes them, does things to them, and rides them very well, can do tricks, and commutes like long, long distances, not just commutes, but goes out on these things. Kenneth has also taken on a new adventure. He is going to be a guide on the Appalachian Trail. Did I pronounce that right? Appalachian, I guess. Hiking trail. He is planning a very long hike. And people, there's a group of, or a series of podcasts from people who become sort of narrators of their hiking adventures. And I know I'm not explaining this as well as he could, but he's going to be doing that. Anyway, I'm flattered, and always have been, when I first heard, wow, I had a listener in Georgia, I guess, at the time. Atlanta's still in Georgia, yeah. I was thrilled. Somebody young, he was a student at the time, and it just blew me away. And it's always stuck with me. Well, I had the pleasure of meeting Kenneth on my way back from Florida. And an interesting young man. And another, I guess, unique person. I'm very attracted to the people who are different. And he's different. He's a one of a kind. His girlfriend made me a beautiful, I don't know what you call it. It's not crocheting. It's not crocheting. It's not knitting. It's a needlepoint, I guess, of a perfect rendition of Timothy Leary's Head with the chemical equations for, I think, LSD and marijuana embroidered at the top. I've been a little afraid to put it in my road trick. That's where it belongs, but it's the kind of thing that would certainly probably strike a border guard's interest, to maybe make him look a little deeper through the various drawers and compartments. I don't know. But anyway, thanks for that. So anyway, I'm going to be listening to him once he launches off on this journey and undertaking. So there you go. One more very interesting person out there. And I'm grateful for that. A related story. I just sent him a copy. Him and Jason, Lebanese Jason, a copy of a story I just found. I dug out my old hard drive to get some music for this podcast and found, ooh, there's my acid story. That story was always in my mind, and I actually wrote it, put it down to paper, and so I found a PDF version of this story, about 9 pages, of my first acid trip in Tangier. And I found it and forgotten all about it. This was written in 2000. And read it and was kind of pleased with it. Yeah, okay, that captures what I wanted to capture. So this is a shout-out. If anybody out there is interested in reading a piece of writing that I did that kind of captures, well, the adventure I had traveling through Europe in 1970. It's not a long, involved thing, and it focuses on that first trip, but if you're at all interested, let me know, and I'll send it to you. I'm hoping it's going to be the inspiration. I doubt it will be, but was hoping that it might encourage me to try and capture some of the other stories, maybe the mushrooms in Palenque. That would be good. Yeah. But it's just the discipline, the time. I don't know why I had time in the year 2000, but now when I have time, I don't have the motivation. Okay, I won't go on much further about that. One more story again, and it all connects. I subscribed to the digital version of The Walrus. I used to have the magazine version. Now I just have a digital copy, and was very pleased to see they're doing a story, The Untapped Promise of LSD. Psychedelics are a potential cure for everything from depression to addiction. Why did we ban these drugs in the first place? So I'm very pleased to see that, and pleased because, damn it, I have been harping on this for so long on these podcasts, and even in my men's group, like why I'm so angry at the American government stomping out all research, deciding it's too dangerous. And I guess nobody fought back and said, oh, okay, we can't get that, can't do that anymore, all right. And they stopped for decades research into how this could possibly be helping with certainly PTSD, alcoholics, manic depression, all kinds of things. So now there is a resurgence. I'm just going to read a little bit from this article, just one paragraph. There may be a number of reasons for this sudden resurgence. More sophisticated medical imaging has given us a better map of the brain, and we know much more about the body's complex chemistry. The war on drugs, now almost 50 years old, has predictably failed to curb our ancient affection for both intoxication and self-derangement. There's also greater awareness of and interest in indigenous cultures in which several psychedelics are considered sacramental. In an era of lethal street drugs of uncertain strength and ingredients, traditional psychedelics, particularly those directly derived from plants, may no longer seem quite as dangerous. They feel almost pure and authentic, like organic vegetables or craft beer. I like that. Yeah. And finally, in an era of spiritual confusion and apocalyptic politics, psychedelics once again hold out a promise of both solace and transcendence. A better, or at least radically different, world, they say, is possible. Now that message has never died to the people from the people, or by the people, whatever, who took acid back in the 60s and 70s. They've always, anybody who's done this knows this is great. Why the hell this disgusting, this shameful war on drugs that has just continues to kill so many and imprison so many is just, it's unforgivable. Unforgivable. And it's like we will control you. Now, I know I've gone on this rant so many times, but let me tell you right now, it's very reassuring to see this mainstream publication, Walrus, out of Canada, an excellent magazine, by the way, is saying exactly what I've been harping on for a very long time. It looks like there is a couple of books out that I'm going to have to get my hands on. Psychedelic Revolutionaries is the one by Barber. And, of course, he talks about Osmond and Hoffer and Aldous Huxley and Timothy Leary and all the things they were doing. Here's a little quote from the 1956 poem that Osmond, "To fathom hell or go angelic, just take a pinch of psychedelic." That is just great. That fits right in with the book I've just finished, Huxley's Doors of Perception and Heaven and Hell. So, anyway, they've done a whole lot of... There's a whole lot in this article. I guess I won't go on. So what about the here and now? Did I talk about my group Friday night? Yeah, I think I did. If I didn't, doesn't matter. I don't feel like it now. Yeah, a lot of this is, what do I feel like talking about? That's what makes it work. Drove my son in. We always have good conversations. Might have the radio on, might talk about music, but very often about politics, the future of man. Like I say, now that he started reading, we can branch into that. Very often, he accuses me all the time, "Dad, stop getting so emotional," because when he hits a hot button, I overreact. I really do. I just can't control it. It's just the way I talk, but maybe I'm more so that way with my son than with others. I don't know. Yeah, I'm sure there's a factor in there that I should try and get a grip on. But, I mean, we end up still talking and leaving on the best of terms. It's no problem there. They talk about in this article about the more flamboyant Leary, soon to be known for his raucous, drug-fueled house parties at Harvard, was transforming himself into a high priest of hallucinogens. He felt very strongly that society as a whole needed these drugs and that everyone should be doing them. And that's why I champion Leary, but you can see why the Huxleys and the intellectuals and the doctors at, you know, mental institutions saying, "Wait a minute, hang on there, buddy. Not so fast." I'll read one more paragraph from here. Soon it seemed everyone was doing them, right? Drugs considered sacramental were now recreational. Drugs were abused. After failing to establish a psychedelic colony in Mexico, that was what Leary planned to do, in another very interesting chapter in his life, Leary holed up in a mansion in upstate New York. Wow, is that a story too? To which hundreds of young followers and an avaricious media flocked. As the Grateful Dead lyricist John Perry Barlow put it, in Birth of a Psychedelic Culture, "The Beatles had dropped acid and the whole world had noticed, but not everyone was pleased. The Empire was about to strike back." That is so well put. The Empire was about to strike back. LSD soon became synonymous with factions on either end of the political spectrum. Dirty, criminal, deranged hippies on the left and brainwashing CIA agents seeking to weaponize the drug on the right. Myths and misconceptions multiplied. As far as Huxley and Osmond were concerned, Leary had irrevocably distorted the public's perception of psychedelics, and the media's portrayal was almost exclusively characterized by debauchery and danger, bad trips, suicides, police raids, young minds lost forever. In one letter to Osmond, Huxley wrote, "I'm very fond of Tim, but why, oh why, does he have to be such an ass?" I think I've read that line on this podcast before. Okay, I'll try and let go of that, but it's interesting because, well, isn't that interesting? The fact that only a couple of days ago I found this story I read on my first acid trip, and now here I am with the Walrus, just from a day ago, that picked up all about LSD, and I have been reading and writing and talking about this for so long, I guess I just can't let go. All right. I guess I've said enough. That's 16 minutes. Is there? I feel there's something I should be adding about the here and now. It is Saturday. No, it is Monday. Of course, Monday. It's this holiday I've just mentioned. We have men's group tonight. And I went online. We had no set topic. And the guy who usually reads the group is in Florida. And I step in. I feel I kind of like that role. So I Googled, just for the hell of it, men's group topics. And sure enough, found a manual for men's groups with a sort of an alphabetical list of topics, things to talk about. And I thought that was kind of interesting. And so I picked out a few. One on shame. I thought shame was an interesting topic. We did touch on it. I won't even get into the details because it is... We've agreed to keep this private, although one man already told his wife that he wanted to get high with Ken. Some men were shamed as boys and have lived under its shadow throughout their lives. It is the force that prevents them from being authentic. Other men have moral compasses that are out of alignment because they lack the ability to feel shame. Shame can have positive effects on our lives, or we can be captured by its dark side. We need to understand this powerful force. What actions are we rightfully ashamed of, and what events have we been wrongly shamed by? How are shame and guilt related in your life? That's a pretty good, you know, topic right there. There's another one called Zenith. Yeah, I should go right to the article itself. Yeah, sorry, we're going to do a little more here. Oh, damn it, I don't have that anymore. Bookmarks, please. Where was I? Topics and themes. There we are. Yeah. So what was this one? I just mentioned depression, drugs, father's food, God. No, we've done enough of that. We've done God to death. Money, mothers, movies, nurturing, mythologies, play, poetry, politics, potluck, procrastination, regret, religion, sex, shame, spiritual path. No, come on, wild man, worker jobs. Zenith. Yeah, zenith. I have read that men have less than 10 peak experiences in their lives. Winning a gold medal at the Olympics might be one, or perhaps when Pablo Picasso finished Guernica and realized it was a masterpiece might be another. But typically there are others. Now, I don't know why he chose those examples. My God, that doesn't apply to most men. These are times when we are so into the experience, this is what a zenith is, and so certain of the outcome that we feel immortal. What were some peak moments in each man's life and why? How was it readjusting back to mortal life? Can we make these moments happen, or are they gifts? Ooh, I like that line. Now, I feel reluctant to bring this one up because I do feel I've had many zeniths in my life that I talk about on this show. And there are others in our group who are a little quieter, a little more traditional lives. And I would have a feeling a few might struggle to find their zenith. So there's one called The Wild Man Within. And the other one I do like is Xenophile or Xenophobe. Some men are interested in foreign culture, others are afraid of them. This topic can be interesting when asking, what cultures, time and place, would you like to have lived in, and what ones would you fear to live in? Now, I think that's a great topic. Maybe we're all a bit xenophilic, I guess, attracted to foreign cultures, peoples, customs, and xenophobic, fearful of foreign peoples, cultures, customs. So that's one I could do. And again, though, I feel, geez, I've lived in Nigeria, I've lived in Japan 8 years, and I think a lot of these people have maybe traveled and had holidays, but certainly not been. But the idea of the question I was found interesting was just pick a time and country and maybe personal situation. Like, I always think, yeah, I'd love to go back to be a Victorian gentleman. And when I say that, I mean, and not a Dickens character, but somebody living in a very nice house with a French maid, scantily clothed, Excuse me, sorry. My mind wanders. I was just thinking, the French Lieutenant's Woman, John Fowles. Wow. Do you remember when Fowles was in vogue? I read all his books. They were great. And then, you know, I guess there was a span to somebody's life. It's like Solzhenitsyn. You just don't hear about him anymore. All right. Here's our... Oh, we're past the 22-minute mark. So I heard my wife is up. I heard the coffee grinder going. So Scarborough Dude signing off. Hope you enjoyed that last little bit, the men's group, because it is of the here and now, and it will come to life tonight one way or another. All of this... There's no piece that's separate from anything else. Everything is connected. And believe it or not, all of us are connected. You, the listener, me, the talker right now. Kenneth, you way out there and braving the wilds of Atlanta. Signing off. Good morning. It is Tuesday. Oh, I declared this the day I have to get to work day. I've got stuff to do for my summer tour, like book the school buses and, you know, stuff that's not hard to do, but it weighs on me. Like, I don't feel like working today. And, oh, I've got to make a spreadsheet for Greta about, you know, when she won't be there and we'll need to book guest speakers and little things that aren't hard if I just do them. But the more I put them off, the heavier they weigh. So, all right, that's what I'm facing today. I've only got 6 minutes left here in this clip to end this show, and that's something I'll do today. I'm back down in the basement, and a few things to catch up on, just to wrap up. I went to the men's group last night, and I realized I'm sort of coming at it. Sometimes I foolishly pride myself with being quite different from most of the other people there. Then it turns out there is another guy who was doing some pretty neat things in his youth. And, you know, last night as we left, I said, you know, we got to get together for a beer sometime. So that was a sign. But I'm sort of going on quite often about, you know, the wonders of Timothy Leary and LSD and it sparks an interest in some, and yet there are others in the group who have had addiction issues themselves, or family members who have had mental issues, you know. And it made me think, you know, maybe the path I'm sort of putting out there is not, clearly it's not right for everybody, and it may be better I just keep some of that to myself, be a little more sensitive to what's around. But that's why it's all part of the learning experience. I think I learned something last night. It was a very emotional, very moving, very deeply felt gathering. So anyway, listen, I just read a passage from William Burroughs' The Soft Machine. I could not get through that book. I don't think I've ever read the book. I've got two or three copies of it. But, you know, all these old, again, 95-cent copies. Oh, I couldn't resist. You see it in a used bookshop. The Soft Machine, a novel by William Burroughs, author of Naked Lunch. And randomly picked one passage, and it was so gruesome and horrible and difficult to follow. They're images, right? That I thought, I don't really need this in my collection, except foolishly one day I decided I needed a Burroughs collection. So I have quite a bit of his stuff that I've never read, and I should get rid of that soon. But I found a bookmark there, and it thrilled me. It's a bookmark I designed, AP Shrink Wrapping Specialist, Amity Packaging, 1118 West 15th Avenue, North Vancouver, Kenneth Bowl, manager. When I was running a little workshop for people I'd started working, I mentioned, with mentally handicapped adults, and eventually got the position of running this workshop, and it needed a name. I came up with Amity Packaging, Friendship Between Nations. So that's going back a long, we're talking early 70s here in Vancouver, or mid 70s, I don't know exactly when, but there it is, even a little logo for it, a shrink-wrapped box with the letters AP in it. And people said, well, hey, you came up with that? Yeah. Okay, anyway, park that. But it's neat to, you know, randomly pick up a William Burroughs book and find a piece of your life in there in the form of a business card you've made. Listen, I'm on several blogs, and this, I don't know if you'll hear it well, this came up. It's called Love Letter from God.
The words you are about to experience are true. They will change your life if you let them. For they come from the very heart of God. He loves you. And he is the father you have been looking for all your life.
Fuck you.
This is his love letter.
I think I'm going to stop it there because I don't want to take up too much more time of this podcast with that love letter. It's a visual, lots of images, and somebody posted this on West Island Baby Boomers, a website that's been absolutely great, all about people who lived in Lachine, Dorval, Pierrefonds, the West Island of Montreal. And it was just sharing memories of bars and places. And then this morning, this guy posts this, and it really pissed off a lot of people, but it's still up there. The owner or the admin hasn't taken it down yet. So I've been kind of debating and, you know, saying this is, if it was a little funnier, it would be a joke, but it just doesn't quite make it as a joke. And the tragic thing is, some people might take it seriously. So, of course, the guy who posted it, may God bless you. And I answered back, which God? And he wrote back, the universal God, the only universal God or something. And I responded, sorry, don't know that one. But lucky for me, I get by a little help from my friends. Just stupid, just to annoy him. But, like, why do I even bother? Like, why get drawn into this? It's just, oh, it's as sick as anything out there. And these people won't see it, and yet it's a sickness in the form of what is seen as good. But, you know, maybe the same people would say that about all kinds of things. Anyway, what a shitty note to end on. No. simply because you're my child, I am your father, I offer you more than your earthly father ever could. Ooh. Oh, for I'm the perfect father. Well, fuck you, God. Fuck you. What about that little girl that just got murdered in Scarborough? Was that a nice thing to do? Sorry, what a note to end on. But hey, come on, it's the Dixon James podcast. I'll be back next week. Why did I let this guy poison this podcast with his love letter? What kind of God? What kind of love? Sorry, my apologies to my more sensitive friends out there. Next time you hear from me, it'll be about PodCamp Toronto, and looking forward to it. So stay tuned. All right? Scarborough Dude, thanking you for putting up with me for so long. Bye for now. Thank you.